Well, good morning. It's good to be here again this morning. I was on the way this morning and saw two boat trailers and one boat sitting down the road here, and I wondered what it must be like to lay down all your responsibilities and go fishing for a day. But truly, there is a benefit of coming and serving the Lord, worshiping the Lord, and being together in the house of God. And the encouragement we received from that, I've been glad for that this morning. Before I begin, I want to thank you for each that showed up Friday to help at the school. Thank you for that. I also want to thank the congregation for the meals that have been brought in so far since the birth of my son. It makes life lighter for us. So this morning, I want to think about thankfulness for a while this morning. I know it's not late enough in the year to be time for Thanksgiving holiday, but if you're like me, the busyness of life and the difficulties we face in life, you need a reminder. Or you could use a reminder more often than once a year. To be thankful, to focus on things to be thankful for, and to focus on continuing to be thankful. I'd like to look at the story of the children of Israel that came out of the land of Egypt. But before we do that, I'd like to look at our previous memory verses. You find them in 1 Corinthians 10, 1 to 13. These stories that we have recorded for us are for our examples, so we do not fall into the same traps. Let's see what he has to say here. Just a reminder. 1 Corinthians 10, verses 1 to 13. Moreover, brethren, I would not that ye should be ignorant how that all our fathers were under the cloud and all passed through the sea, and were all baptized unto Moses in the cloud and in the sea, and did all eat the same spiritual meat, and did all drink the same spiritual drink, for they drank of that spiritual rock that followed them, and that rock was Christ. Now, as we look at these first few verses, we think about he's focusing on the benefits that they had, the miracles that they saw. They were baptized unto Moses, a very revered man amongst the Jewish people. He's held up very, very high. It would have been something if you could have lived under his command. And we have the ate manna. And they drank water out of the rock. I don't understand what all the implications here. It says the rock that followed them. I don't understand all that. But they had many benefits. As we compare that to ourselves today, what kind of benefits do we have? We just sang that song that we're a child of the King. And the benefits that are available through that. And then we can be part of the other song that we sang. We can be part of God's kingdom. Again, rally around the banner. So as we think about the children of Israel, as we think about them coming up out of the land of Egypt and the things that they struggled with, and as we think about the benefits they had and the benefits that we have as well, we have the same human nature as they did. Verse 5, but with many of them God was not well pleased, for they were overthrown in the wilderness. Now these things were our examples, to the intent we should not lust after evil things as they also lusted. Neither be ye idolaters, as were some of them. As it is written, the people sat down to eat and drink and rose up to play. Neither let us commit fornication, as some of them committed and fell in one day 23,000. Neither let us tempt Christ, as some of them also tempted and were destroyed of serpents. Neither murmur ye, as some of them also murmured and were destroyed of the destroyer. Now all these things happened unto them for examples. They are written for our admonition, unto whom the ends of the world are come. Wherefore, let him that thinketh he standeth take heed, lest he fall. So we have this warning here. that the same things that happened to the children of Israel can happen to us as well today. You know, what else could these people have wanted? Yes, life was difficult. It was. And is life not difficult for us today at times? And why did they so soon seem to forget what God had done for them? But aren't we about the same? So these things are for our examples, our admonition. He says in verse 12, if you think you can stand or are standing, be careful, you might fall. So let's keep those things in mind as we look at this story. You can turn over to Exodus 15. This is the account of the crossing of the Red Sea. I'd like to... Exodus 15 is actually the song. It says the song that they sang. We'll get to that shortly, but let's go review the story first. A very familiar story, but let's review it. You know, the children of Israel, as we know, they were in the land of Egypt, and here they are finally after 430 years being able to leave Egypt. We remember the plagues. They kept ramping up worse and worse until finally the death of the firstborn, and Pharaoh says, get out of here. Y'all leave. Well, it didn't take him very long. I tried to research how long it took them to get from Ramses, where they gathered, to the crossing of the Red Sea. And there was varying opinions, but anywhere from a week to a few weeks, it was somewhere in the range of 250 to 300 miles, maybe even 350 miles that they had to trek before they got to the Red Sea. So Pharaoh finally, he decided that he doesn't want these people to leave after all, and all his help is gone. And he gathered his army together and pursues after them. We know how the people were very afraid, and they murmured, not knowing that this was designed by God to further decimate the Egyptians. You know, God had said, He says over in chapter 14, verse 4, I will harden Pharaoh's heart, and he shall follow after them, and I will be honored upon Pharaoh and upon all his host, that the Egyptians may know that I am the Lord. And they did so. So God took them down by an unusual route, and he brought them in, and they were boxed in, mountains on one side. They were in what we would call a box canyon, walls on both sides, so I understand, and the sea out in front of them. Nowhere to go, and Pharaoh's army came in behind them. And Pharaoh thought that he had found his chance to capture the children of Israel as they became boxed in by the terrain. But God said, go forward. Go forward. Where was forward? It was to the sea. God says, go forward. This is the last time you'll see the Egyptians. Remember how the angel of the Lord in the pillar of cloud, it went from before them, went around from to behind them to keep them separated from the Egyptian army. And we have Moses holding out his rod, and the east wind began to blow, and the waters of the sea parted. It says that the east wind blew all night. And it seems like the Israelites made it through that night on dry land. I don't know for sure, but there was a lot of people. Several million, probably. But they had an army behind them, and God worked out the details. But sometime in the morning watch, which would be sometime between 2 and 6 a.m., the Lord looked through the cloud and the fiery pillar and troubled the Egyptians so that their chariot wheels fell off. And they began to realize that they had made a mistake. You know, I wondered why, after all the Egyptians had been through, why did they try to follow the Israelites down into the seabed in the first place? But it does say that that pillar was light to the Israelites and it was darkness to the Egyptians. So I don't know. I suppose they would have understood where they were going. But then in the morning, we have Moses stretching forth his rod again, and the sea returned in its strength. When the morning appears, it seems like it was probably light by then. And the when the Egyptians drown, and it says in verse 27, and Moses stretched forth his hand over the sea, and the sea returned in his strength when the morning appeared, and the Egyptians fled against it, and the Lord overthrew the Egyptians in the midst of the sea. So most likely the Israelites witnessed the Egyptians' destruction. Well, were the children of Israel thankful? Yes, they were thankful. They were tremendously thankful. You can imagine the emotions that they had. Going from the army, Egyptian army, pursuing them, to standing on the other shore and knowing that the danger is gone. It's gone. We'll see the Egyptians no more. And so they sang this song. And I like to read this song. Then sang Moses and the children of Israel this song unto the Lord, and spake, saying, I will sing unto the Lord, for he hath triumphed gloriously. The horse and the rider hath he thrown into the sea. The Lord is my strength and song. He has become my salvation. He is my God, and I will prepare him an habitation. My father's God, and I will exalt him. The Lord is a man of war. The Lord is his name. Pharaoh's chariots and his hosts hath he cast into the sea. His chosen captains also are drowned in the Red Sea. The depths are covered. The depths have covered them. They sank unto the bottom as a stone. Thy right hand, O Lord, is become glorious in power. Thy right hand, O Lord, hath dashed in pieces the enemy. And in the greatness of thine excellency, thou hast overthrown them that rose up against thee. Thou sendest forth thy wrath, which consumed them as stubble. And with the blast of thy nostrils, the water are gathered together, and the floods stood upright as in heap. And the depths were congealed in the heart of the sea. The enemy said, I will pursue, I will overtake, I will divide the spoil. My lust shall be satisfied upon them. I will draw my sword. My hand shall destroy them. Thou didst blow with thy wind. The sea covered them. They sank as lead in the mighty waters. Who is like unto thee, O Lord, among the gods? Who is like unto thee, glorious in holiness, fearful in praises, doing wonders? Thou stretchest out thy right hand. The earth swallowed them. Thou in thy mercy hast led forth the people which thou hast redeemed. Thou hast guided them in thy strength unto thy holy habitation. The people shall hear and be afraid. Sorrow shall take hold on the inhabitants of Palestina. Then the dukes of Edom shall be amazed. The mighty men of Moab, trembling, shall take hold upon them. All the inhabitants of Canaan shall melt away. Fear and dread shall fall upon them. By the greatness of thine arm, they shall be as still as a stone, till thy people pass over, O Lord, till the people pass over which thou hast purchased. Thou shalt bring them in and plant them in the mountain of thine inheritance, in the place, O Lord, which thou hast made for thee to dwell in the sanctuary, O Lord, which thy hands have established. The Lord shall reign forever and ever. For the horses of Pharaoh went in with his chariots and with his horsemen into the sea, and the Lord brought again the waters of the sea upon them. But the children of Israel went on dry land in the midst of the sea. And Miriam, the prophetess, the sister of Aaron, took a timbrel in her hand, and all the women went out after her with timbrels and with dances. And Miriam answered them, Sing ye unto the Lord, for he hath triumphed gloriously. The horse and the rider hath he thrown into the sea. So here we have this song of praise and adoration, extolling God. It's a song of overflowing thankfulness. And I wonder what it sounded like for 3 million people or so to sing a song together. Let's look at a few things of what they stated in their song. In verses 1 and 2, they were giving God the credit for their great deliverance, and rightly so. They acknowledged the great salvation. He has become my salvation. He is my God. They claimed this God as their own, you know, from a people that were used to a polytheistic society, a society that had many gods. And they said, I will prepare him an habitation. We want God to dwell with us. And we go over to verse 11. There's no other God like this. Who is like unto thee, O Lord, among the gods? So much praise and adoration. And then we have in verse 14. The people shall hear and be afraid. They understood that those people who were the inhabitants of the land where they were heading would be afraid. And that was so. We know that they found that out later on, many years later, when they came into the land of Canaan. But then it says down in verse 18, the Lord shall reign forever and ever. So just a great upwelling of praise and adoration to God here. All of which was in order, considering the great deliverance. But what happened a few days later? Let's look at, well, it's still there in chapter 15. What happened? They came to Mara, and the waters of Mara were bitter. What did they do? They had just seen this great salvation of the Lord. It says they complained, or they murmured. They murmured against Moses. They murmured because the water was bitter. Yeah, they really did. You have to give it to them. They did face a major difficulty. A lot of people, a great crowd of people like that, and the water was bitter. We can't drink the water. We're in the desert. What are we going to do? But had they already forgotten what God had done for them? Had they already forgotten the song that they had just sung? And then we can look at Exodus chapter 16, just a few days later. There was probably between the crossing of the Red Sea until they got to Mount Sinai, where each one of these three situations where they complained was within just probably a little over a month. Exodus chapter 16, verse 1 to 4. And they took their journey from Elim, and all the congregation of the children of Israel came unto the wilderness of Sin, which is between Elim and Sinai, on the 15th day of the second month after their departing out of the land of Egypt. So this was a 1 month mark. And the whole congregation of the children of Israel murmured against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness. And the children of Israel said unto them, Would to God we had died by the hand of the Lord in the land of Egypt, when we sat by the flesh pots, and when we did eat bread to the full. For ye have brought us forth into this wilderness to kill this whole assembly with hunger. So here they faced another huge issue. The food had run out that they had brought from Egypt. They were hungry. They needed food, this great multitude. But what a way of dealing with the situation. Again, had they forgotten? Had they just forgotten what God had done for them? This God that they had recently asked that he would build, that they could build an habitation for. But here they were, they murmured. Then we could turn over to Exodus chapter 17 for one more. Exodus 17, 1 to 4. And all the congregation of the children of Israel journeyed from the wilderness of Sin after their journeys according to the commandment of the Lord, and pitched in Rephidim, and there was no water for the people to drink. Therefore the people did chide with Moses and said, "Give us water that we may drink." And Moses said unto them, "Why chide ye with me? Wherefore do ye tempt the Lord?" And the people thirsted there for water. And the people murmured against Moses and said, "Wherefore is this that thou hast brought us up out of Egypt to kill us and our children and our cattle with thirst?" And Moses cried unto the Lord, saying, "What shall I do unto this people? They be almost ready to stone me." No water again. And this is the place where it talks about in 1 Corinthians where the water talks about the water from the rock. This is where Moses smote the rock and they received water. But it had gotten serious. Moses was afraid the people were about to stone him. So all this in about 1.5 months of travel. Where was their great provider from the Red Sea? Where was he? Well, what is here for us to learn this morning? You know, I admit this is a pretty extreme case. But isn't this our natural tendency as humans to easily forget the good things that God has done for us, and we complain and we fuss about our lot in life? And it's our tendency to focus on the hardships and not on the good that we have received. What is God's desire for us concerning thankfulness? And I would like just to read several verses here in the New Testament, and then we'll go on and talk about some more things. And a lot of these, one of the verses is in Hebrews, and we don't know who wrote Hebrews, but I was amazed at how often Paul talked about being thankful. And I went to look, see how many times he used the phrase, "I thank my God," or similar. And I found 11 times that he penned those words, but then there was many other times I became aware of that he indicated thankfulness. And so a lot of these references are from his writings. We have Colossians 2, verse 7. Brother Henry pointed these verses out a few Sundays ago. "Rooted and built up in him, established in the faith as ye have been taught, abounding therein in thankfulness." And you remember the way he explained that. Thankfulness with no bounds. So God's desire for us is that we would be abounding in thankfulness. And then we can go on next chapter, Colossians 3, verse 15. "And let the peace of God rule in your hearts, to the which also ye are called in one body, and be ye thankful." Not optional, be ye thankful. You can turn back to Ephesians chapter 5. Most of these are very familiar verses. Ephesians chapter 5, 19 through 20. "Speaking to yourselves in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, singing and making melody in your hearts to the Lord, giving thanks always for all things unto God and the Father in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ." Giving thanks always for all things. And then we have the most common one probably in 1 Thessalonians 5, 18. "And everything give thanks, for this is the will of God in Christ Jesus concerning you." It is God's will that we would be a thankful people. And then the reference in Hebrews chapter 13, verse 15. "By him, therefore, let us offer the sacrifice of praise to God continually. That is the fruit of our lips, giving thanks unto his name. So we had the reference, giving thanks always, and here we have to offer praise continually. So it's not optional for the Christian life. It's not just for special occasions. Well, what about the Israelites' thankfulness then? Was it inadequate, or what was wrong with it? I like to think about two different words, and this may be a play on words, but it helps me understand a few things about thankfulness. I like to think about thankfulness or gratitude. Thankfulness is basically being conscious of the benefit, usually included expressing thanks. Okay, we try to teach our children to thank mom for the meal. And it becomes habitual, but it's something that children have to be taught. Someone gives them something, tell them thank you. That's an outward thing, and we teach them to do that. We require them to do that. It's a more reactive or outward response to a benefit that was received. As just like the Israelites' response at the Red Sea, it was they were praising God. They were thankful to God for what He had done. There's no doubt in my mind that they were. It's thankfulness is it's easy to see the action in response to the blessing. Very appreciative of the goods or services received. Well, let's think about gratitude just a little bit. When I started to study on thankfulness, I got to thinking about synonyms and other words that would maybe better describe. Because I looked up thankfulness in the dictionary and it gave a very bland definition. It wasn't nearly what I was hoping to find. But let's think about gratitude. Gratitude focuses more on appreciating the giver for the blessings received. It's a deeper, more enduring attitude of life's blessings, even in challenging circumstances. And that's one of the things that caught my attention, that gratitude can be maintained even in challenging circumstances. And we see that the children of Israel, it did not happen. The depth of their thanksgiving wasn't deep enough. And they complained and they complained. And the same thing can happen to us. Some more things about gratitude. Again, it can be practiced even in the face of adversity. And I thought about the example of Job as compared to the children of Israel here coming out of the land of Egypt. We know Job had many, many material blessings. Was he thankful for them? I believe he probably was. We don't have a specific indication of that. But we can see by his life, because of his thankfulness to God and his dedication to God, it made a difference in his life. And it factored in, I'm sure, how God described him to Satan there that day. That thou consider my servant Job, there is none like him, upright and perfect. Well, we know what happened, that Satan accused Job of serving God because of the things that God had blessed Job with. Did Job lose focus when those things all got swept away? Did he lose focus like the children of Israel did and revert back to murmuring again? You know, we know that Job has some wrong ideas about God and that needed to be corrected, and God dealt with that. But let's look at a few of Job's responses to his adversity. In Job chapter 2, we have where he replies to his wife's idea of how to deal with the situation. Job chapter 2, verse 9 and 10. Then said his wife unto him, Dost thou still retain thine integrity? Curse God and die. But he said unto her, Thou speakest as one of the foolish women speak. What? Shall we receive good at the hand of God, and shall we not receive evil? In all this did not Job sin with his lips. Job still hung on to God. He still, the gratitude that he had in his heart to God still carried him through in this time of adversity here. Turn over to Job chapter 13, verse 15. Though he slay me, yet will I trust in him, but I will maintain mine own ways before him. Though he slay me, yet will I trust in him. How much would it take you or me to rattle us? Job stood steadfast, even though he had questions and he had things that he dealt with and struggled with. Job chapter 19, 25 to 27. Remember, these are some more of Job's words, own words. For I know that my Redeemer liveth, and that he shall stand in the latter day upon the earth. And though after my skin worms destroy this body, yet in my flesh shall I see God, whom I shall see for myself, and mine eyes shall behold, and not another, though my reins be consumed within me. Dedication, steadfast to God. And then one more, Job chapter 23, 13 and 14. But he is in one mind, and who can turn him? And what his soul desireth, even that he doeth. For he performeth a thing that is appointed for me, and many such things are with him. I believe it was Job's gratitude to God that carried him through. It's one of the things that helped carry him through. Here he says, God is sovereign. Whatever he feels fit to bring into my life. What would have been different with the children of Israel's story if they would have turned to God instead of murmuring, instead of complaining? Job's focus was well placed in the giver of his blessings. He was convinced that God was good, even when things went terribly wrong. Gratitude promotes trust. Another thing about gratitude, it involves recognizing the source of good in my life, not just the good that I receive. You know, we talked about thankfulness is more of a thankful for the object that I received. Gratitude is focused on the giver. It involves recognizing the source of good in my life. James 1 verse 17 says, every good gift and every perfect gift. I better turn to that before I get it. Quote it wrong. Every good gift and every perfect gift is from above and cometh down from the Father of lights, with whom is no variableness, neither shadow of turning. No shadow of turning. Every good gift comes from above, and we don't need to distrust God in any way. God is, says there's no shadow of turning. So as we think about Job and then we think about the sources of good in his life, I wonder, did Job recognize that nowhere else he could obtain good? And what other immediate source of good was there? Satan had caused him much grief in trying to get him to curse God. His wife was no help. His friends made matters worse trying to help him. So let's remember to to identify the sources of the good that we experience in life, and especially God. Another point, we need to live on the same line. We need to live appreciating what God has given you instead of focusing on what I wish I had or where I could be. You know, God is, in His sovereignty, has placed us where we are in life. And it's by our own, some of the reasons we are where we are is because of some of our own choices that we made in life as well. But if you are following God and you are surrendered to God, God has a plan of where you are and why you are where you are. And He has a reason that you are there. So let's not begin to murmur about where He has placed us in life. Gratitude promotes trust, and we see that in Job's life. Does God really know what's best for me? We need to learn to trust in God, and through that, as we have gratitude for what He has done for us, it will help promote that trust. Another point that I have is, what did we as sinful human race really deserve anyway? I thought about, as an example, Luke chapter 17. There's two little stories there. Thought about the Samaritan, the 10 lepers, and the Samaritan was the only one that came back, the only one that returned to give thanks. I wondered why he did. Why was it the Samaritan that returned? Is it maybe because he felt undeserving being an outcast to the Jews? Was it because of his... I don't know why, but I think maybe that had a little part to play in it at least. So as we think about that and we think about our consciousness of our self-worth and where we place ourselves, I think our thankfulness and our gratitude will be in proportion to how much or how little we think of ourselves. I thought about the gratitude focuses on more than what I can do in return. It focuses on more about what I can do in return for what has been done for me than what I can get, what else I can get. Luke chapter 17, verse 7 through 10, he talks about the servants there. But which of you, having a servant plowing or feeding cattle, will say unto him by and by that he, when he has come in from the field, go and sit down to meat, or go eat, and will not rather say, make ready wherewith I may eat, I may sup, and gird thyself, and serve me, till I have eaten and drunken, and afterward thou shalt eat and drink. Doth he thank that servant because he did the things that were commanded him? I trow not. So likewise ye, when ye have done all these things that are commanded you, say, we are unprofitable servants. We have done that which was our duty to do. Just a willing servant. That attitude will go a long way in our determining whether we are thankful or have gratitude in our hearts for what has been done for us. The thought about thinking about that is thinking about his gratitude towards God. We also need to, it's helpful to recognize people who have made a positive impact on your life. We need each other. And what can I do in return? I think if this attitude can be carried out in the brotherhood, it will help, will go a long way in smoothing out the rough patches that we come across. Another thing that we can do that promotes gratitude, thankfulness, is consciously list the things that you're thankful for, and especially where those things come from. It will promote a sense of well-being, especially in troubling times. You think about that Psalm 27 down here, what David talked about, and it seemed like he was in a tough situation. And he says, the Lord is my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear? He focused on the good that God had done to him in the past, and he identified where he had gotten that. And he enumerated that here in this situation. And I believe that it brought a sense of well-being to him there in his troubling time. What happens with the opposite when we do the opposite, when we do not identify the things that we are thankful for, and we do not identify the people or the giver, God, who is the giver of every good and perfect gift? We will lead to a discontented life and an inward focus and an entitlement culture. And we know we don't want to go there. We don't enjoy being around people like that. And last point, gratitude is not just a feeling, but a deliberate practice. And it's something that we're going to have to practice if it's going to work in our lives. The Israelites didn't have to complain as they did when there was bitter water, or the food ran out, or when there was no water. It takes a deliberate choice to overcome our default of complaining. So this morning, who am I like? The Israelites in the wilderness who complain in spite of all the miracles God had done for them, the great deliverance they had experienced. Or am I like Job, that in spite of all his difficulties, he maintained his confidence in God? I think this morning that the depth of your gratitude will make a difference in which camp you find yourself in, or the camp that I find myself in. So let's each one of us today make that deliberate choice again. It's a daily thing, I believe. Remember 1 Thessalonians 5:18, and in everything give thanks, for this is the will of God in Christ Jesus concerning you. May God add his blessing.